This is Countdown to Exegesis, your listen-along Steely Dan podventure. Join me, Andrew Souter.
And me, Ollie Piper, as we explore the Steely Dan discography track by misanthropic track. But wait, there's a twist, a gimmick, a delicious dash of jeopardy.
That's right, because while Ollie has the Steely Dan back catalogue tattooed on the soft side of his soul, I'm new to the Dan and would like to keep it that way.
This means Andrew is hearing every song for the first time. Will he love it? Will he hate it? Should I care? Let's find out.
Exegesis.
Countdown to Exegesis is a Patreon-supported podcast. Pledge just £3.50 a month to unlock bonus episodes and make our little hearts sing. Just visit patreon.com/countdowntoexegesis.
It's Christmas, dear listeners. Old Santa draws near. But something seems different. A strange, studied sneer has taken the place of his once merry smiles, and he's swapped jingle bells for Mingus and Miles. The elves have been fired, the Grinch has been sued, and don't ask for presents, he's not in the mood. If they wanted FedEx, then they should have paid him. You won't even get coal from Jolly J. Fagan. Merry Christmas! We are together as one, me and Andrew Souter, in the same room, as is tradition.
Well,
we did it last year.
No, we did it 2 series ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we had a conversation about 10 minutes ago saying, why are we in the same place?
Yeah.
We usually do this remotely, despite living quite close to one another. But hey, Spirit of Christmas, this is going out, if all goes well,
yeah,
on Christmas Day.
Is that the plan?
Yeah, it will go out on Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Maybe I'll make my mum listen to it.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, everyone can listen to it around the Christmas table with their family and impatient children before any presents get opened.
Yeah.
Exegesis. Let's make it part of the Christmas tradition. Anyway, today we are discussing the final track on Katie Lied.
Fucking yes.
I was going to say, maybe Andrew has more than one cause for celebration today.
I'm very happy.
Yeah.
Because the last 4 songs have been a slog.
Four?
Well.
Not four. Come on.
Any World That We're Welcome To, dreadful. Chain Lightning, dreadful. What was before that?
Your Gold Teeth 2.
Yeah, okay, that was all right. But
an
it was still
an absolute gem. An absolute carved gemstone of a song.
Sure. But come I just, now. You know, this series has dragged me down.
Well, I mean, this ties into this this episode a little bit, but last series I think I learned that some of the songs that fly by on a casual listen on Pretzel Logic don't stand up to an hour of scrutiny.
Yeah,
but the flip side of that is that I've learned that some songs that passed me by before, wink wink, nudge nudge, reveal loads of charms upon deep scrutiny.
You're talking about this song?
Oh, I didn't say that. No, did I?
This has revealed many charms to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not laying my cards on the table.
I mean, you
who
have.
Knows?
You just have.
Who knows how I feel about this song? But I will say this. Yesterday I had a nap. Because I was a bit poorly.
Yeah.
And I woke up from a nap and I was like, oh God, I've got to listen to that Steely Dan song, haven't I, to get ready for the episode. So I put it on and I opened a Word document and put on Throwback the Little Ones. And the first thing I wrote in a sort of hypnagogic state was, is it possible? It was like, how is it possible for a wah guitar to sound smug? I think
it's very possible, actually.
Do you think?
Yeah, like every wah guitarist who uses wah as you'd expect wah to be used. Allah Jimmy. Not throwing any shade at Jimmy. But the guitar shop Jimmy likes.
Yeah.
Are pure smugness.
That's true. Yeah, okay. Well, I was barely awake when I wrote this, but I just there was something about that little riff that I did not want to hear. And which has not improved on repeated listenings. But I'm looking forward to I feel like the last couple of episodes I've been a bit dour. In a, hopefully in a positive way.
I don't know. Sorry, I'm just thinking, can the listeners hear my cat, like, mewling in the background?
I don't think they can. I don't think they can.
Well, you said that last episode when she was mewling quite loudly, and there was just one little bit in the edit where I heard her go growl in the background.
Actually, I did too. Yeah.
So it was there. There
she goes again. Yeah.
That's Joni. She's a Siamese, 8 years old.
Yeah, doesn't like me.
Doesn't like Andrew. Does not like being shut out of the room that we're in now, which is why she's doing that. She's not under any distress or anything.
Yeah,
she's quite happy. She's just complaining. Anyway, where do we start with this? What do we usually do?
Well, I just want to say that I love doing this podcast, Ollie. Big fan of the podcast experience, but I'm so glad this album is over, because it is like one of the most front-loaded albums I've heard in a long time. So like, sure, Bad Sneakers, good song. Rose Darling, good song. Dr. Wu, mixed feelings, but pretty good. And then it's just like, it just falls apart.
I can't believe you're not putting Your Gold Teeth 2 on.
Which one's that again?
Throw out your gold teeth and see. I need to sing Your Gold Teeth 1. Throw out your gold teeth and see how they roll.
Oh, who are these people who fly through the sky?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all right. What I'm saying is, I feel even more than at the end of Pretzel, like the end of series 3, we were doing Pretzel Logic. I think we were both weary.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a similar sensation with this, that, you know, sure, I'm going to miss recording. I'm going to miss our chats, but I'm not going to miss this album.
It's funny because last series we were feeling similar moods for different reasons.
Yeah.
But this album, I've enjoyed it, and I love this album.
Mm.
But I will say, yes, as I've said before, I can't remember if it's on a Patreon or the public episodes, Steely Dan do front load their albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are very guilty of that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there's like a 2-song blip on this album, though.
You know? That we've just experienced.
Yeah. And I would only say that about any world after having gone through that process. So to me, Katie Lloyd is almost a spotless album. However, going through this thing with you doing this fucking podcast means, again, I've started to sour on a couple of songs that on this album would just like wash over me before in a fairly pleasant way.
Hmm.
So, hey.
I think it's quite sad in a way, because if you rewind to the beginning of 2021, when we first began recording this podcast,
when I could get an erection,
back when you were full of vim in various ways, I think if somebody had said to you, what are your hopes for this podventure, Ollie Piper, you would have said, I'm going to just get to talk about my favourite band, Steely Dan, is going to be great. And Andrew is going to learn to love Steely Dan. It's going to be great.
I think that's probably,
What's happened is that I've remained unconvinced, and you've discovered things to dislike about them. So really, it's the only people benefiting from this podcast are our listeners.
Well,
we are martyring ourselves on the hills of our own minds.
Well, no, I was going to... the next thing I was going to say is I wonder how our listeners feel. And I would like to know if you feel like writing to us. As in, do we have listeners, for example, I doubt it, who were not Steely Dan fans and have become Steely Dan?
We'll
get on to that. Let me finish my thought.
Okay,
I assume this is the majority, listeners who are Steely Dan fans, who have, by listening to us, sort of gurgle on, about certain songs. Have it's, they've lost their sheen a little bit, those songs.
But also maybe like, so because I can't listen to Steely Dan without thinking about what you think, and presumably you now can't listen to Steely Dan without wondering what I think.
Yes.
Yeah, which must ruin it for you.
Only when I'm doing this, like when I listen to Steely.
Sure. Yeah.
You are not in my thoughts.
No. Me. But you've only been listening to Steely Dan for this podcast recently, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, I still listen for pleasure.
Really?
Yeah, just not the album that we're not the album that we're doing at the time.
Right. Yeah.
So basically, because this series has taken us a fucking year to record.
Yeah.
Almost literally.
Yeah.
Like, I basically haven't listened to Katie Lloyd in full for a year.
Yeah.
But I listened to, you know, Gaucho and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, anyway, to get back to the point, we mentioned last episode, I can never remember the name of the segment. I still call it Agony Dan in my head. I've never seen you looking so bad, my funky one.
Yeah.
Where we had to listen to problems. Your friend wrote in with a problem.
Yeah.
And the problem boiled down to, forgive me if I'm wrong here, friend, is it Matt?
Yeah.
Matt, was something along the lines of, I feel a duty to listen to your... I really enjoy the podcast.
Yeah.
You put the duty word into it. I really enjoy the podcast. However, I hate almost every Steely Dan song and I feel obligated to listen to it before you start.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got a message from Matt. What did it say?
It said that he's learnt to like Steely Dan.
Yeah.
But this will disappoint you. He likes Can't Buy a Thrill.
I'll go further. You see, this is where everyone starts. This is where everyone starts. It's like your... I remember talking to some of your friends when we started the podcast and it was kind of exciting. People actually wanted to talk about it and things. And
yeah.
A lot of your friends were saying, oh, I like Dirty Work, or I like, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of 70s rock stuff. Why is it when you inject a bit of misanthropy and jazz, why does it turn people off so much?
I would say it's the smugness that turns people off.
Do you know what? I genuinely don't hear it.
No, but that's because you... Well, there's a number of possibilities. I mean, just to bring this round to the topic of today's episode, there is an indefinable smugness to this song, which you probably can't hear. But I can... It's so palpable to me. And I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's the fiddliness... Mm-hmm. Of the arrangement, the sort of Zappa-ish fiddliness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it's the fact that it's a sort of self-aware song about like cultural appropriation that says nothing, but it's kind of like aware.
Did you come did you come to that conclusion by yourself that it was a song about
cultural... No, you told me it was about cultural appropriation. Okay. I mean, I've got another theory about it.
Okay, carry on.
I'm just saying there is something cold, smug and unlikable about this song, but I can't really say where the... It's kind of like somebody once said about Jane Austen that
talking about smugness and unlikability. Are you serious?
Well, I am on thin ice accusing Steely Dan of being smug. But you know,
Jane Austen, finish your
story. I feel all self-conscious now,
and so you should, but I want to hear the end.
Somebody once said that Jane Austen, of all the great novelists, she's the hardest to catch in the act of greatness.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, meaning that she never appears to be working hard to achieve her effects.
Mm.
And yet she's a great novelist. I mean, I'm not a big fan myself, but whatever.
You're saying something similar to Steely Dan. They effortlessly achieve greatness, but it's hard to see their workings.
No, I'm saying that it's hard to catch them in their smugness. It's like there's an all-pervasive smugness, which is extremely off-putting, but it's like, where is it?
Well, perhaps we should lead on to song facts, because there's some interesting parallels. Well, there's just a parallel, right? But if you search... This is basically my song facts. Mm-hmm. It's about everyone thinks this is a bad song.
Oh, really?
And beyond that, everyone thinks this is just about the worst thing. If you search worst Steely Dan songs on Google, the first two hits are like listicles, or just lists, right?
Yeah.
Of like the worst Steely Dan songs. One from Far Out magazine, another one from, I can't remember.
Far Right magazine.
Far Out. Sorry, it did sound like Far Right. Far Out magazine. Yeah, both name them as the worst. Far Out magazine said that you might find this interesting. The biggest issue with the song is the phrase that hasn't aged well. In the opening line, they say, lost in a barrier, I walk like an engine. The meaning of the phrase isn't clear. Some suggest it means walking barefoot, but regardless, it doesn't sit right in 2023, they said.
Right, okay.
But anyway, that's by the by. Also, in Metal Leg Fanzines...
You know, this is part of it, right? I cannot wait to not hear about Metal Leg Fanzine.
Era-defining.
For like 6 months, or however long a break we take.
In Metal Leg Fanzine's era-defining Ladies of Dan poll.
Does this exist? Did you just make up this poll?
So I can just make up facts. Like,
is it, does it genuinely exist?
It does. And okay. I actually read through it at some length the other day. Because before I was just kind of picking out facts from articles and going around. And it's written with the most, I mean, talk about smug, yeah. but also condescending and just like, it's not even like veiled misogyny. Mm. It's like,
I mean, it's called Ladies of Dan.
No, I think I actually,
you just made that up.
Title. Yeah.
Oh but, my God.
Just in my head. It says something like, oh, maybe they don't like this song because there's a bit too much sex in it. Yeah. They said that. And I remember which song it was. It was fucking Everyone's Gone to the Movies.
Right,
they suggested that women didn't like Everyone's Gone to the Movies because it had too much sex in it, and it's fucking Everyone's Gone to the Movies.
Yeah,
a song about a child life.
Forgotten about that song.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. So did I.
Yeah.
Neither of us mentioned it on our.
Bad song.
Difficult, tricksy song, spiky song.
There's nothing tricksy or difficult about it at all. It's just.
You called it a soft span. Anyway, let me finish my point.
Okay.
They said it was the worst Steely Dan song, The Ladies of Dan. They also said...
They voted that it was the worst Steely Dan song. They voted
that it was the worst Steely Dan song. It also won, if you like to call it that, the strangest Steely Dan song.
Right, okay.
As well. So that's all my facts, is that the critical opinion, or fan opinion, of this song is poor.
Yeah, interesting.
People think it's a right old ropey weirdo.
Okay, and before coming to record this episode, what was your view of Throwback the Little Ones?
I think what has happened with Katie Lyde, despite me having listened to it many times through my life, is that to a certain extent I have switched off after Your Gold Teeth 2 in listening to it. You know, like you do, and you forgive albums that you like. For things like that. And this, having been preceded by two songs that I'm not 100%, not massively keen on, it kind of got left with, it kind of picked up a bit of their stench of mundanity.
Right? Yeah.
However, opposite to some of perhaps the Logic's tracks, this is like, yeah, it's opened itself up to me a little bit, and that's what I'll say.
It's opened itself up to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or you've opened yourself up to it?
Well, it's a who can separate the two. What's your vibe, Andrew Suter?
I forgot to prepare a vibe, so let me write one.
I also forgot to prepare a vibe.
Do you want to go first?
Can we look angrily into each other's eyes?
How about we look angrily into each other's eyes? We do a 3-2-1 countdown and then we say our vibes at the same time.
I'll give it a go.
Okay. 3-2-1. A disappointing fish supper. What was yours? Circus tricks.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't really know. I mean, do you question the author who does an automatic writing session?
That's a difficult question to answer.
It's a bit circusy and it's a bit tricksy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And also, there has been a thread running through this podcast of you alluding to the Carnivalesque.
Has there?
Yep.
Oh, I wrote a whole thing about
Your Gold Teeth being like a circus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure. Oh no. And also, Brian Roston in the Monkey in Your Soul episode. I think compared it to no, you did again. You said it was like you said the baseline was like an elephant or something.
I obviously have like my pool of references is obviously like three objects.
Yeah, like circuses,
a clown's nose, and
yeah.
I don't know what the other ones are. Well, anyway, what's yours?
Mine was a disappointing fish supper.
Why is a fish supper? Do you look forward to a fish supper?
I don't think I've ever had a fish supper. What is a fish supper? Is that it's just a dinner
with
fish, right?
I think it's an American. No, that's the fish fry. A fish fry is like the American version of fish and chips.
Oh, I bet it's shit, isn't it?
I don't know. Never had one.
No. What I'm saying is, so a fish supper, I assume, is a meal, an evening meal that features fish.
Whoa, Einstein, fucking hell, Sherlock.
No, I mean, as opposed to like...
Exegesis is flowing.
I mean, as opposed to supper.
Okay.
Which in England is what posh people have after their dinner.
Yes, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
I think really posh people just call dinner supper.
Right, so maybe, yeah, exactly. So is the fish supper a fish dinner? Or is it a little bit of fish after your dinner to get you ready for bed?
In any case, you're not elucidating anything about what your vibe means.
My point is this. In the song Throw Back the Little Ones, mm-hmm. there is a central fish metaphor.
Oh, there is. That's true. Yeah.
Throw back the little ones, pan fry the big ones.
Yeah.
You use tact, poise, and reason, and gently squeeze them. Mm-hmm. What I'm suggesting is that this song is not very good. And also, the other thing I'm suggesting is that this is the final song on the album, right? Uh-huh. So it's kind of the supper of the album.
Are you making this up as you go along?
My point is, right, that this is the grand finale of this album. Mm. And as fish suppers go, it is shit.
But you didn't even know what a fish supper was.
Really. It's a meal. It's an evening meal involving fish.
Yeah, okay.
I just think, no, genuinely, I'm making a serious point here, Ollie. I think...
Do you have to? Okay, go on.
Yeah, that's what we're here for, isn't it? Yeah, a serious point.
All right.
How can this be the final song on the album?
Well, you obviously, you know, it hasn't sat well with you. Maybe if you sat with it for another 20 years and then, you know, did another podcast about it, things would be different.
I'm not sure. I think if you said to even somebody who likes Steely Dan, is this a good album closer? I just think their sequencing is truly awful. Like, you think back to Pretzel Logic.
Okay. Well, Pretzel Logic had awful sequencing.
Awful sequencing.
Yeah. I don't think Katie Light has awful sequencing. The players on this song. Who's on piano?
Donald J. Fagan. Michael O'Martian.
Fagan on vocals. Boccara on guitar. Boccara on drums. Yeah. Obviously. Who's the solo?
I think it's Walter Becker.
No.
Oh, I think it's Jeff Skunk Baxter.
No way. He's not coming back.
Oh, he's not coming back.
Forget that man.
He's dead.
Forget that man. Yeah. Okay. Don't say he's dead because he might die in the time between us recording this and going out.
Is that a threat?
What? It is your friend of mine.
Elliot Randall. Right. Him of Reeling in the Years fame.
I believe he did Reeling, didn't he?
He did, yeah. That was a good song, wasn't it? Do you remember that one?
It still is a good song.
Yeah, no, that was fun.
You're allowed to go back and listen to it if you want.
Right, so Randall's back.
Randall's playing the slick solo.
I liked the solo. Yeah.
On this song.
Good solo. I thought it was Beckery. Because, you know, on Black Friday, he does the sort of quite loose and a little bit sort of swaggery solo.
But do you think this is loose and swaggery?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it's tight and melodic.
Yeah.
But it's got a sort of... I think it's just because the rest of the song is so uninteresting that when the solo starts, it's kind of like, oh, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in my head, that's loose and swaggery. I'm like,
I think he's working to a tight melodic brief.
He is.
But he's allowed some swagger to creep in there. Yeah. Which is, you know, that's Randall for you, isn't it?
That's when you would give Randall a call.
Are we allowed to like Randall? Does he have any like terrible political opinions?
Almost certainly.
Mm.
He's he's a rich man in his 70s. He's probably a slumlord. No, actually, sorry. Elliot Randall follows us on Instagram.
Oh, in that case.
And I think he's a lovely, lovely fella.
I love the man.
Yeah.
What a lovely man.
Hey, Ollie.
Yeah.
What's your favourite thing about Christmas? I just feel like because we introduced this as a Christmas episode, ooh, it's coming out on Christmas Day. We haven't mentioned Christmas at all.
No, you're quite
and right. Throwback the Little Ones is not a Christmassy song.
What do I like most about Christmas? This is going to sound very self-inflatory.
Right.
But I like giving gifts.
Mm.
I really enjoy choosing and giving gifts.
Mm.
When you reach my advanced age,
yeah,
receiving gifts is lovely, but it gets less and less special because you start to lose interest in the material, perceived material value of things. You know, just as we kind of
you've lost interest in the material possessions.
Well, just as
says the man with the gold watch.
That is a lie. You know, as we hurtle towards the grave,
yeah,
one starts to treasure the more important things.
Well, let me surprise you. I think I've got way more materialistic as I've got older.
Really?
Yeah, I think once not materialistic.
Money. You like money.
I like money, but I like, for instance, 10 years ago, I didn't care about clothes at all.
Mm.
Whereas now I'm a bit of a clothes horse.
Ah.
Why are you saying that like you're surprised? Come on.
I just.
What I'm saying is that that is something which I would have dismissed as trivial as a younger man.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been like, it's all about listening to records, reading, you know, going to gigs, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't want to get too serious.
Whereas now I'm like, oh, I need to get a nice...
It's all part of the same coin. Weird way of saying something. But, you know, as you get older, you start to appreciate the moment more, don't you? I think. And what are clothes, if not a...
cloth moments.
Well, no, as a thing for the moment. You don't hoard clothes because you love to hoard shoes, like...
Yeah.
Imelda Marcos, or whatever her name was.
Mm, right. The Philippine parent.
I mean, I'd love it if you had that sort of shoe collection. That would surprise and delight me. But no. Like, you know, clothes are for heightening the moment, aren't they? Peacocking.
Yeah, bit of peacocking. Yeah, mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but on the other hand, maybe it is all part of the same coin. But it feels like a sort of spiritual decline to me.
Hmm.
That now, in my late 30s, I think more about clothes than I did as a young man. I just feel like that's something that I should have got that out of my system as a young man, mm-hmm, rather than get into it in my 30s when I should be focusing on buying property. And creating a legacy.
But what? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I won't go there.
No. Go on.
No. I was going to be like, what if like 99% of us are going to afford property? You know, and then it would go.
Well, no, I can't afford property.
But no, we're going to a political wormhole.
Oh, this is I see. What people
want on Christmas Day?
No. Sorry. Yeah. So on Christmas Day, your favourite thing is giving.
What's your favourite thing
on Christmas Day?
Mm.
My favourite thing on Christmas Day is.
Do you like the feeling of being slightly tipsy and too full of food?
Not really.
No, nor do I.
No, I don't like that.
So why do we do it all the time?
Because we are stuck in a room with our families, who tend to be difficult people, and we need to get through the experience somehow, and the best way to do that is by eating and drinking.
Are you going
to
play this episode on the Christmas table on Christmas Day?
I mean, yeah, they probably wouldn't notice it was on.
Andrew's blabbering on again.
My favourite thing about Christmas is I like the decorations.
Mm.
I like that.
Is this your truth?
I don't know. I genuinely don't like Christmas. But I like the idea of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Christmas could be something wonderful, but it isn't because we get bogged down in stress, materialism, familial tension, and consumerism. I've already said that.
Yeah.
But the idea of Christmas is lovely. It's like, oh, we're getting to the end of the year. It's cold. Everybody needs a break. Let's have a lovely meal, put up a tree, you know,
Yeah.
Listen to the Queen,
King. Do you drink at Christmas?
Do I drink at Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you drink copiously?
I probably drink too much, yeah.
I've never drank at Christmas. I've never drank on Christmas Day.
What?
Beyond like a glass of wine.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's just not done in my family. We don't really drink.
Oh, right. No, in my family it's like midday, you know, gin and tonic.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like sanctioned. It feels sanctioned.
Okay.
But this is part of the mystery.
So I feel like I'm missing out on a part of Christmas, sorry. Is like, what is it like to be... I've missed the kind of like daytime drunkenness part of the whole feeling fat and windy.
Yeah.
You know, part of the equation.
Yeah.
I haven't felt fat, windy and tipsy before. Maybe I'll try it this year.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. Because it gets to like 4 p.m. and it's like, should we play a board game? Everybody's just lying around like big jellyfish.
Do you know how we started this part of the conversation being like, oh, we need to talk about something Christmassy because it's meant to be a Christmas episode. Mm. And now you're going, I hate Christmas.
No, I don't hate Christmas.
No, but I just want to paint a picture from the listener's point of view. You know, you're going, oh, stick a tree in a corner and fart on the top, or whatever. and I'm just going. we are not conjuring magic here, are we?
Christmas is a time of giving. It's a time of celebration. It's a time of love.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, it's a time of love.
Mm-hmm.
If you listener, if you love somebody, tell them this Christmas. Yeah,
it's a weird thing to say to someone. This Christmas. I think the horns on Throwback the Little Ones were probably arranged.
Genuinely, because we're sat in the same room together, I knew we were doing a podcast because there's a big microphone in the room, but I genuinely had forgotten about Throwback the Little Ones.
Yeah, I know you want to forget. Let me finish my players. The horns were arranged by Jimmy Haskell.
Haskell, he's popped up before.
He's popped up before.
Yeah.
He's arranged for CSN. Neil Diamond, Elvis Presley, and I think we saw him on...
My Old School?
Was it My Old School? I can't remember. I know we've seen him before. I thought he was on... what's that one which is just like short and weird and stringy? Through with Buzz, yeah.
That was Haskell.
I don't know. I can't remember exactly where he appeared. But we've seen him before. And he's back for the horns. So the music... I mean, I will start by saying this song, it is a shoo-in. For your musical, is it not? The Steely Dan musical that you keep talking about, this series. You've got a whole, all planned out in your head, jailbreak scenario, Becker and Fagin, and all these kind of crims on the run.
The Butcher Boys,
yeah, sorry, yeah. And and it opens with Turn That Heartbeat Over Again.
Yeah.
Surely this sits within the musical.
Where would this go?
Well, I don't know, it sounds...
The Butcher Boys go to the beach.
The point I'm making is I've reached back into the same toy box. It has a carnival-esque, Broadway-esque kind of feel to it. Do you not agree?
No, I think it's a sort of limp funk.
You can't imagine the Butcher Boys on stage sort of stomping around.
Like a horn licensed in the barrio. Yes. I walk like an engine, so nobody will ever suspect I'm quite dull.
Yeah. You can't imagine it.
I can now, but that's partly because you started doing a little dance.
Yeah, it starts with like a sailor's hornpipe, so they're at the docks, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on. I don't know, well, it's your musical, but you know, they're
to be honest, I've lost interest in the musical.
Maybe they're... Are you serious? It's all you talked about last episode.
Well, that's because the song was so fucking boring.
Anyway, I'm making a point. Your musical doesn't matter. I'm making a point that this reminded me a lot of, as a closer as well, Turn That Heartbeat, which was one of your favourite Steely Dan songs.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Because of that theatricality, which you seem to not be able to hear.
No, I can't hear it. I genuinely can't hear it.
Just because it's like, it's lots of changes. It feels like different voices. It feels like
Fagin just droning on.
It feels sung dramatically in that slightly campy way. That's something like Turn the Heartbeat is sung.
No, I don't.
This is not a heartfelt man and his guitar song, is it?
No.
It's the opposite of that. And the opposite of that is a Broadway musical.
His ham-fisted exegesis in last month's Vanity Fair made me cringe.
So come on, talk to me about it.
What do you want to know? What do you want to know about the music to this song?
First impressions. You thought the riff was smug.
I thought the riff was smug, and I can't defend that to you as an opinion because it's so subjective. There's not even any attempt at musical criticism.
Why are you angry at the riff being smug?
Because I don't like smugness.
Okay.
Nobody's like, oh, have you met John? He's great. He's so smug.
Well, I don't... No. I know that. I mean, I wish, right? It would help me socially, but... I mean, because I...
Sorry, I just love the idea of being like, oh, Georgia, have you met Ollie? He's smug.
Smug with a capital S. Yeah. I mean, because I think... So my thoughts on the riff, kind of nothing riff, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is part of my... I'm not going to say problem with this song, but part of the reason why this song passed me by. Because I heard that riff many, many times in my life. And I'm like, it's not a great riff.
No, it's not a great riff.
You know? So I can see how you, standing with your head in the breeze, and this riff ruffles your hair, in a way as to say, I'm important. Might come across as smug.
Yeah.
Right. But what if you just adjusted your expectations a little and were like, actually, the riff's not, it's not trying to be a big rock riff. It's not trying to really establish itself in any kind of way.
So you're asking me to entertain the idea that this riff is not smug?
No, it's part, boring. It's part of, yeah, basically.
Okay, but, yeah, I'm happy to, happy to concede that.
But it's part of a, you know, a musical whole. It's part of a Broadway-esque whole, you know. No one's like, have you heard that song from the fucking King and I? Oh, that riff is killer. Do you know what I'm saying?
What's the King and I?
I know, I think it's a musical.
It's a musical, okay, yeah.
Is it? I don't know. Okay, what? Okay, the riff you came across the smoke. What happened next? Fagin comes in. He's talking about a barrio, he's lost.
Yeah.
We're not talking about the lyrics, just the music.
Sure, just the music. I just to be...
I'm putting you in there. That's
yeah.
That's the vibe.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't like it.
Okay.
Didn't find it funky.
Mm-hmm. Is it trying to be funky?
Yeah, because like boom da ga dung
dung ga ga dung. I don't think it's trying to be funky at all.
No, but it's trying to be.
At this song from different directions.
So, what do you think it's trying to be?
You're in a Chinese restaurant trying to order off an Indian menu. You know, it's not working.
What?
It's not trying to be funky. It is stompy and like and theatrical.
Right, okay.
To me.
Well, either way I didn't like it.
Okay, fine. And then it does all sorts of interesting changes.
Yeah.
It squashes three beats into the length of four.
Okay, so one thing I did observe,
mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy, but I did observe. Is that is a bit like the bit in Doctor Wu.
Which bit in Doctor Wu?
Can't remember. No, it's like the bit in Your God Teeth 2.
Mm.
Or is it the bit in Doctor Wu? In one of those songs, it slows down.
Yeah, but it's not...
It doesn't slow down, but the effect is of slowing down.
Yeah. It's not interesting.
Ooh. No, but I'm saying it's clearly something that he was experimenting with as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were experimenting with as songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I suppose, is interesting.
Yeah.
If you like that sort of...
Yeah.
If you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, as you well know. How does the chorus strike you?
Softly.
It's not a strong chorus.
It's not a strong chorus,
but that doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. Right.
So what you're... Sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it feels like your angle on this song is that none of the ingredients are good, but that together they create an interesting stew.
Is that your feeling?
Like
I don't think this isn't a song which is like musically. I'm like, whoa.
Mm.
It's more like, you know, if you're married to a man for 20 years and you like him enough, he's all right, right?
Mm.
And then
he's clean.
Yeah, and then you discover he can talk like an Ethiopian dialect, whatever.
And he's kept that from you for 20 years.
He's kept that from you for 20 years. And you're like, whoa.
So genuinely, this is like this is a revelation to you.
Yeah.
As a long-time Steely Dan listener.
Yeah. Yeah,
so as a short-time Steely Dan listener,
but this is
no revelation.
This is the problem. Mm-hmm. So for you, you know, it's first listener, this is... If you could define a grower, there'd be a naked picture of me. No, if you could define a grower, like in the big dictionary of jazz rock, this song would be the illustration to that.
Or it would say grower noun, see, throw back the little ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, or yeah. Ollie Piper's penis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly that. Okay, get through this song, right? Just follow it. Just complete the journey with me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Instrumental midsection.
Yep.
Zappa-esque, you said.
It is Zappa-esque, I would say.
Do you enjoy it?
No.
Not a single moment.
I like the guitar solo entry.
Uh-huh. And then the horns.
Yeah.
Time changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The horns come in and then instantly dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
For no reason. For no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking love it.
Do you?
Mm.
You love the... Okay, so the horns in particular.
Just the whole thing.
The whole of that instrumental section?
Mm-hmm. Half planned, half improvised guitar solo, hemiolas stitched in.
Yep, hither and thither.
Big dynamic oomph, and then it dissipates away, which is one of your favourite things about... can't remember.
Your
God Teeth 2.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised you're not, you know, judging it by the same yardstick. But anyway...
Well, like, oh, this song has dynamics, therefore I must like it.
Tailor-made for Oliver Piper, that kind of shit.
Yeah, I mean, it did occur to me. And it did. I did actually think, when I was listening to it, I was like, Ollie definitely likes this.
But I didn't love it. It would have been probably would have, you know.
But that middle section is made for Piper.
Yeah.
In the same way that...
But even then, I couldn't recall that middle section before close listening. So this is why I'm so excited to talk about the song.
Mm. And why you must be so sad that I'm giving you so little.
Would you like me to show and tell you about something?
Well, we haven't got to the end of the song yet, have we?
Oh, but I mean, I've...
Well, no, because there's an important thing happens.
There is an important thing.
Yeah.
There's an outro.
Hmm? Piano outro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it... So tell me, is it a quotation from something?
Ding 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 ding.
Yeah.
Ding,
ding. I was like, I reckon this is a bit of classical music that they've adapted.
It has a classical feel, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nice surprise. After all the stylistic shifts, I think it'd be a classical.
Mm. It's almost like they were saying, "How do we end this?"
Well, I have a fact about that. You reminded me.
Great.
Uncredited. Michael L. Martian wrote that.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That should have gone in the song facts section, really. But yeah, Michael O'Martian came up with an end. So presumably they didn't know how to end it.
Mm.
They had to get session player Michael O'Martian to to do the job. And he did it. He did a fine job.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a great way to end an album.
Can we just agree to, like, you know, to boost the positivity?
Sure, yeah.
It was great. It was a great way to end the song. Yeah. You did a really good job, Michael.
Okay. Well done, Michael O'Martian. I hope you got paid fairly.
It's the exciting finale of Brian Rusten's Storytime saga, Can't Buy a Skull. Our heroine, Kat Stevenson, has revealed herself to be quite the badass after ruffling up the abusive financier Benton Tusk and rescuing her brother, Dean, from an accidental kidnap. Has she pulled the right strings and saved society from the New World Order? Let's find out.
Part 10. Throw back the little ones. The palace that Kat had taken Dean to was bustling with movement, while simultaneously being raided by UN forces who were taking out computers and file cabinets in giant plastic wrap. There were employees trying to bring in new furniture and equipment. Dean was watching Edmund Beryl's compound be razed and raised at the same time. Who's taking this over? Kat chuckled.
Me.
You? Said Dean. Someone came up to Kat with a clipboard with something for her to sign. She waved Dean through the foyer and up the massive staircase. Let's go to my office to talk. Kat walked Dean up to the room where the gray men used to meet. It was to become her office, and it had already been remodeled. Cat sat at a mahogany desk tucked between ferns and paintings of Catherine the Great and Joan of Arc, which Edmund had kept in the basement. The rest of the office was roomy with the giant conference table and its accompanying chairs removed. Cat still needed to fill the rest of the space, but for now, a slick, unused leather armchair was seated opposite her desk, so she and Dean could talk. "So," she began. "So," he responded. She sighed contentedly. "You're currently in the office of the head of a new branch of the World Bank, a branch to ensure what happened over the last 2 weeks never happens again." Dean raised an eyebrow. "And you're the head of it, I take it?" "Yep," she squealed. "No offense, but how in God's name did that happen?" "Well, you remember Benton Tusk betrayed all his conspiracy friends and crashed the blockchain?" she said. "You explained," he said. "Well, a certain someone may have forced him to do it," she said, her face scrunched up in self-satisfaction. "I see. You, I take it." "Yes, and then I blackmailed him," she said, leaning back happily in her new desk chair. Dean's eyebrows raised. "You what?" "It was apparent Benton was going to run things for a while, until all the new governments were coming back together, and I convinced him to set up this branch of the World Bank called the Anti-Collusion and Cartel Collective." "You might want to work on the name," Dean interjected. "Yes, well, Benton obviously did not want to hire someone who had just put a gun to his head. Long story. But after everything was done, I showed him something in Edmund's files I'd come across that I wondered if he'd find interesting," Kat said while moving her mouse on the computer, looking something up. She turned the monitor toward him. Dean's eyes squinted, then he shuddered in disgust. "I didn't know someone could do that while wearing a headdress. The thought wouldn't occur to most people." Kat nodded. "Most people wouldn't want that sort of picture coming out either, so Benton offered me this job in exchange for my silence." "Isn't that something the new ACCC would have a problem with?" Kat raised her chin, slightly indignant. "I'll ask the head of it next time I see her." "Makes sense. One more question." "Shoot." "Is this where you're going to live? Are you not coming back to Exeter? You've still got an apartment there," he asked, getting up to look out the window at the fjord. "Neither of us are going back to Exeter, brother." He turned sharply to look at her. "What?" "Yes, Dean, we need you here," she said, also getting up and heading to the door. "Excuse me, you can't tell me where I can and cannot go." Kat opened the door to reveal a heavily armed guard who already had the acronym ACCC plastered across their chest. "Tell that to him," she said simply, pointing to the guard, and left the room. Dean walked up to the guard. "Well, show me to my room then, I suppose."
Would you like to play a little game?
Sure. Is this your show and tell?
This is my show and tell.
Oh, great.
This is a game called Throwbacks and Little Songs. Okay?
Little Songs.
Little Songs. Okay. Throwbacks and Little Songs, right? Uh-huh. So how this game works is you're going to hear some Steely Dan songs that you've heard previously in our adventures through sound, right?
Yeah.
These are MIDI versions of the songs, so we're not infringing any copyrights here.
Mm-hmm.
The twist is that they're all played at a ridiculously fast speed.
Okay.
Hence Little Songs, right? They're quite small.
Okay. Okay. Oh, I'm enjoying this already. Okay. I haven't even played me one.
So you get, let's say, 15 points if you get it right in one.
Okay.
And then I'll play you progressively slower versions. Not much slower, but progressively slower versions. And if you...
Once I've got one...
No, if you get it wrong. So you could win 15 points if you get it right first time, 10 points if you hit a slower version, get it right. 5 points if I have to slow it down.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You see what I mean?
I do, yeah. Oh, great.
I'm not explaining it very well, but okay. Here's the first one.
Okay. That's the whole song.
Yeah. It's all sped up.
Play it again.
Okay.
Okay. I've no idea.
You don't know.
I've literally no idea.
Would you like to slow it down?
Yeah, let's slow it down a notch.
Okay.
See if that helps.
Okay.
I mean, I feel I should know because there's clearly a...
There's an ending there, isn't
there's
there?
A piano, like, little outro.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
I'm not going to subject the listeners to all of this, by the way. Would you like to slow it down one more time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, this is the hardest quiz. I have no idea what that was. Like, literally, I don't know where to begin.
What album do you think it's from?
What? Why would I know that?
Well, I just gut feeling.
Gut feeling, Countdown to Ecstasy.
Yes, you bang on.
Oh, fantastic, okay. And it ends with a piano outro.
Dun, dun, dun. Come on now.
My old school.
No. But you're in the right ballpark.
In the right ballpark? Bodhisattva.
Yes.
Can I just say, I'm enjoying this because it's fun to hear MIDI versions of Steely Dan songs played really fast.
Good.
But this is not fair. Like, there's no way I'm going to get these.
Yeah, but, you know, you can play along, you can get in the spirit of it, and maybe our listeners will know. And anyway, you've heard one song so far.
That's true. Okay. Give me another one. Sorry, let's get Christmassy.
Try another one.
Yeah.
Snow is falling all around me. You are hearing very fast versions of Steely Dan MIDI songs. Here we go.
Well, I think it's through with Buzz.
Come on now.
Because it was short.
It was short. That was the fastest version, though.
Okay, play it again.
I'll play your slow one.
Mm-hmm. It sounds exactly like the last one. No, I have no idea. What's really funny is that you, a few episodes ago, you trailed this as like really good fun.
Yeah.
You're like, I've got a really good one planned.
You're giggling.
I'm giggling, but
this is fun.
It's fun, but it's not like.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go on.
I wouldn't have a fucking clue.
Yeah, no, it's impossible. This is literally impossible. I have no fucking clue. Ollie, this is the hardest quiz ever.
I think you got about 3 points there.
Brutal. A brutal quiz. But very Christmassy.
Yeah.
No, I enjoyed it.
That sounds like Christmas morning noise, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I'm sure all our listeners had great fun playing along.
Mm. Good, we've got all the fun stuff. Let's talk about lyrics. So I went to Reddit for opinions on this song. I wanted to gauge what people thought of the lyrics. Two themes pop up in Redditors exegesis of this song. And those themes are, can you guess, drugs and sex.
Right, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So... one theory, so there's basically four theories on Reddit, and they're all wrong, but they're all about drugs and sex. So what one of them is, it's about someone scoring dope in the Hispanic part of town, and in this reading,
pan fry the big ones.
Means cook up the good drugs.
Or like, hey Walter, pan fry me a big one.
Like, well no, I think it means like, get the good drugs and cook them up. But throw the bad ones away.
Right, okay. Yeah.
You know, so if someone's scoring drugs, they're trying to act, you know, cool and trying to fit in the barrier.
Very fussy. drug buyer.
Exegesis 2. It's about an undercover police officer doing a terrible job of fitting in while trying to, like, do a sting on some drug dealers.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, so...
Well, I'm just thinking gently squeeze them. Yeah. That could be used to describe a cop trying to get information out of people in the barrier, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So...
But the last verse doesn't fit with that at all.
No, no. The first verse kind of does. Because, you know, Carlo won't suspect.
Yeah.
I dance in place and paint my face and act like I belong. Yeah, maybe it's a bad undercover copper. But the rest of it doesn't make sense.
No.
Okay, so reading three. It's about a Hispanic guy who leches over young girls.
Yeah, this did occur to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what made that occur to you? What was the...
Well, so I thought, which I think, I don't want to jump ahead, but I think is where you're going to go with this. I thought it was a song about appropriating the culture of ethnic minorities.
Mm.
So, like, you take the best of the culture, you pan fry the big ones.
Yeah.
You dispense of what you don't need.
Yeah.
And because you're a, in inverted commas, civilized majority individual, you are using tact, poise, and reason, because those are traditionally qualities associated with the colonizer.
Yeah, sure.
I buy that as a reading, but then you get to the end and
done like a matador, I pray for the weekend and hope the little girls still throw roses, else I'll change my bait and move upstate.
That to me suggests potentially that his bait is he's gently squeezing little girls.
Sure. Okay. I guess I can see that.
And then I kind of reread it in that light. I was like, yeah, maybe this guy is like, he's popping down to the barrio where he doesn't belong because it's not his neighbourhood.
Reading three was, like a Hispanic guy who leches over young girls. Reading four.
I'm doing reading four.
But reading four was about a Hispanic guy who doesn't like young girls.
Right.
So,
like most Hispanic guys.
Well, you tell me, but, well, no, sorry.
I'm saying most people, regardless of ethnicity, are not paedophiles. That's what I mean by that.
I guess I was reading young girls as like 18 to 23.
Oh, I see. Right,
I was not implying... Yeah, okay. Yeah, that needs clarifying. That is not what I was saying.
Oh, sorry. My mind went straight for the...
Well, okay. So, you know... So there's two differing opinions there.
Right.
So that last verse about the little girls still throw roses, why can't that not be an innocent reading? Because the whole rest of the song, right, is about someone like going into a barrio, a different, culturally different part of town, and expecting to be basically given a show, you know. And that's exactly what verse three is about, you know. He's like at the bullfight and he's overdone it with trying to fit in. You know, it's like the tourist who goes to, well, I don't know, like Ireland and wears a green hat. You know what I mean?
Like, but no, hang on. So in the first two verses, where is it?
No, don't ask that because I can't back it up. But anyway.
Well, I thought that was the point of this conversation.
Yeah, anyway, but no, listen.
You just want me to go, oh, no,
basically. No, the song is about, like, you know, the song could be read, as you say, about, like, someone trying to blend in with a culture that is not...
No, I don't think it's about trying to blend in with the culture.
But you think it's about taking...
I think it's about entering a culture under false pretenses and then nicking the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what, like, all 70s rock bands have done.
Yeah, sure, but do you not think there's a so
lost in the barrio, I walk like an engine.
Whatever that means.
So Carlo won't suspect that something's wrong here.
Like, this is about someone trying to blend in and basically doing a bad job of it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they're not trying to blend in so that they can belong. They're trying to blend in so that they can nick the
But that is
right. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's part of it.
Okay,
because you know you go there as essentially an experience when this is people's lived lives.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to the barrio and painting your face and all the rest of it. You know, thinking that there's a thing that you can fit into this culture when everyone's looking at you like, what the fuck is that guy doing? That's what I get from the first verse.
It's more
like an engine. Someone overcompensating because they're so like culturally, they reduce the culture that they're infiltrating, if you like, to such a basic level that they're, that all that's left are the kind of like theatrical overtones of that culture, at least in the eyes of the,
you know. But also presumably the first line, like I saw on genius.com, people were saying, oh, walk like an engine means walk barefoot. Which to me, the meaning of walk like an engine is to walk in single file. But anyway,
I think
either way, I think the point of that first line is like the barrio is like Hispanic. Right?
Yeah, an engine is nothing to do with
Yeah, or like so there might be some Indians in the barrio.
Yeah.
But it's like this guy is so detached.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That he's like, it's like saying
I read the chorus in the same way as you.
Yeah.
As in, like, however you look at it, like it's about taking what you want from the culture.
Yeah.
And ignoring the details, or ignoring just what you don't want to see about it.
Yeah.
Ignoring the intricacies, or ignoring the bad parts, or ignoring just the stuff you're not interested in.
Yeah.
Like whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So verse three is, for me, it ties into all of that. It's like someone, done like a matador, I pray for the weak and hope the little girls still throw roses. But that ties into that whole thing, because it's like someone overcompensating at a bullfight and... Oh, I hope it's like it used to be in that book I read, like Tall Guy from 20 years
ago. Oh, okay, when
the little girls threw roses at the bull.
Is that something that used to happen in bullfights?
Well, I don't know. That's just the picture I got.
Mm-hmm.
And then change my bait and move upstate. To me, it's not like I'm baiting little girls. It's like this whole thing. The whole thing is like I'm going to go to a different culture, because it just ties into
nick some other fish.
Some other fish and gently squeeze them. Squeeze what I can out of that culture before I move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Because that's pointed out in verse two with the...
Be glad if you can use what you borrow. So I pawn my crown for a ride uptown and buy it back tomorrow.
Like, he's that's like poverty tourism, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like when people on the fucking internet go like, I'm homeless for a night and film themselves. Like, and it does nothing for anyone.
Yeah. It's like a former Secretary of State Ian Duncan Smith saying that he could live off benefits for a week. And you're like, yeah, I'm sure you could.
Well, his house is probably paid off, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember reading an article about it at the time, and it was like, well, okay, so his clutch goes on his car and he's on benefits for a week. He's fine. Somebody else is on benefits for a week and their clutch goes, they're fucked.
Absolutely.
Jump in the city, you massive cunt.
Yeah. But, you know...
Let's not...
Yeah, we still keep voting them in, so...
Well, we. Not me.
Yeah, we didn't know that. Okay.
How would you feel if I revealed that I'd voted Tory at the last three elections?
Well, you were just, like, harping on about Henry Kissinger in the last episode.
It's true, yeah.
But I hope, you know, I think people got the joke. I hope so.
Yeah, it did occur to me actually after that. I was like, maybe just people have no idea.
You can't assume that people know the intricacies of your personality, that's the problem. But
that is the problem, yeah. And that does tie into this song.
Well, absolutely, that's why I said it. So that is my kind of so my surface level reading of this song.
Yeah.
Is that what this is about? This is like Steely Dan going Steve, they're basically writing about cultural appropriation, or like low rent, low effort cultural tourism.
Yeah,
that is my that is basically the long and short of my basic reading. Where do you stand?
I agree, but
so it's not all about sex and drugs, like everyone fucking wants it to.
I don't think it's about sex and drugs.
Why can you not understand that Steely Dan sometimes write about fucking songs that aren't sex and drugs? Like, not everything has to be a fucking sex or drug reference. I get a bit angry about this.
I know, yeah. So,
it bothers me because it's like we've reduced to such caricatures, and it's like oomph their popularity a fair bit, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, no, there's there's nuance in the, you know, there's a lot of sex and drug references, but occasionally.
All I'll say is that I think that the gently squeeze them thing is a sexual metaphor, right?
I don't.
You don't squeeze a fish.
No, I. Well, no,
if you're preparing, if you're pan frying a big fish, you don't gently squeeze it, do you?
No, but I mean,
I've never cooked fish.
I don't think it's a sexual metaphor.
I'm not saying it's a, sorry. I don't know what
you,
I just said.
You don't squeeze a fish. No, but like, but why not put that line in there? Because it's about squeezing what you want out of these cultures. You know, just giving the fish a little squeeze.
Get the fish juice. Yeah. Sure. But all I'm saying is that if then you have a line about little girls throwing roses and immediately after the word bait.
Yeah, well, I'll grant you that. Yeah.
I'm just saying it's not, I'm not suggesting this was, all I'm saying, these are dirty guys.
Oh man, don't do this.
No, they are dirty. They're dirty guys.
Don't do the same old.
I'm not doing the same old anything, but they love a bit of innuendo. Remember, Daddy Don't Live in That New York City No More?
Oh my God, you've got... Okay, listen.
What?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, with the impotence thing. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But you just said to me, okay, well, I can't remember what you said. Anyway, what I'm saying to you is that that's one line in verse 3, and you're kind of applying that back to a whole song. I don't see how that really... I don't see how... Like, so you're saying it's basically like a bit of a sex tourism.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that I think this is a song about cultural appropriation, as you do, but you could, a handy metaphor for cultural appropriation would be sex tourism.
Yeah.
Because you're treating the culture as something to be consumed and bought and rifled.
Yeah.
Right? So... All I'm saying is that I think there is a vague sexual overtone to a few of the lines in this song. That doesn't mean to me that this is a song about going scouting for Hispanic girls.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just saying that I think that it is representing cultural appropriation as kind of an acquisitive thing, like going out scouting for girls. What I'm saying.
I'll grant that's a possibility. Yeah. So you said you had your own theories.
So yeah, I've said them all.
Okay, so my... Overwrought. So I think if you dig just a scratchy scratch of belief beneath the surface, this is Steely Dan being very self-aware.
Yeah.
And talking about their own stealing of black and other musical genres.
Do you find that likable?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, I think this is a really good lyric, yeah.
Because this is what I was thinking about today, right, in relation to this song. Is that, so when we did the episode on Pretzel Logic, the song, we were talking about how the verse about the Southern minstrel show, is that the line?
I'd love to tour the Southlands in a travelling minstrel
show. That's it, sorry, yeah. We were saying it's kind of like, you know, the song is kind of a Ray Charles song or something. It's like a...
Yeah.
It's got its roots in black soul music.
Yeah.
Soul and blues.
It's pretty straightforward blues.
Yeah. And they're saying like, oh, we're kind of doing blackface right now.
Well, you said that. I don't know if I agreed with you at the time.
Musical blackface.
I don't know that. I was like, yeah. I remember you bringing up something similar before, but I'm not sure that I agreed with it with that particular song. But I do think that's what they're doing here.
Right, yeah.
Very, because of course you've got the hot licks and rhetoric. Don't count much for nothing.
Yeah,
why bring up hot licks and rhetoric if you're not you know, basically what they're saying is we've put rock riffs and quote unquote clever lyrics on top of, you know, jazz.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
so. But why is that good? This is what I don't understand.
Because when Steely Dan do those kind of things, right, it annoys you, and then when Steely Dan show that they're aware of doing those kind of things, it also annoys you.
Yeah.
But why?
Because being aware of something doesn't mean you understand something. It's like...
Does it not show a little bit of humility and...
No.
Self-understanding?
No, it doesn't.
You ramble on like they just are the least self-aware people on the planet, you know?
No, I think they're extremely self-aware. That was my whole fucking criticism of Pretzel Logic. was that they were saying they were basically having their cake and eating it. They were doing a blues.
They are doing that. But I mean,
well, but I'm not accusing them of doing that in this song particularly. But I'm saying, like,
generally speaking,
The song Pretzel Logic is like, it is an act of cultural appropriation if you want to see it that way, in that it is taking black music and, you know, it's white guys playing black music. That's what rock music is in the 1970s, predominantly.
Yeah.
So I'm not singling out Steely Dan for censure or whatever, but like, that's what they're doing. And then they throw in this verse to like show that they're aware that they're doing it. I would rather they were just like earnestly loving black music than doing this kind of like self-aware sort of show of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That was what I was thinking about this song. It's like, yeah, I get what they're doing. They're basically owning up to their own acts of, to their own musical like inclinations.
Yeah.
Which is rooted in jazz and R&B.
Yeah.
But like, why is that better than just doing good music? Well, what's so good about being self-aware?
Maybe that's the difference, is that they do good. They do good music.
I know they do some good music.
Like, so just imagine that you're approaching it. They're doing this. They're sending this message, which apparently has passed nearly all of Steely Dan's fans on the internet by. If we are indeed correct, and you know, we have both come to the same conclusion. So
yeah,
not to pat ourselves on the back, but.
We're doing pretty well.
Right, yeah. But where was I going with this? I can't remember. Anyway.
All I'm saying is that I think it is clear. It's clear to me that what they're doing with this song is being self-aware and self-reflective.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same as like describing something or attacking something or being specific.
Okay, so imagine that you thought all their music was genuinely really good and they did this. Would it still annoy you?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to imagine. So, for instance...
I think that's the problem with this disagreement, is that you think it's mostly bad and I think it's mostly good, and that's...
It's a good question, because, for instance, you know, Ollie, I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan.
How long has it been? It's like that old, like, 3 days without an accident.
I love the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. He is extremely indebted to black music,
mm-hmm.
And has lifted whole songs from black musicians, which is then transformed in interesting ways.
With credit.
Sorry?
With credit.
Now and then. Like, it's a complicated thing within the Dylan world. I'm trying to imagine if Dylan wrote a song that was like, I know that I'm a cultural appropriator, you know, I don't think I'd like that. I don't think I'd like it, because it would seem like he was trying to get out of the thing that we all know he's doing anyway. It's like, I guess that's what I mean. It's like a display of self-awareness, but being self-aware isn't the same as being intelligent, you know.
Sure. This is going to sound like a really bad argument, because it is.
Yeah, go on.
It's like, it was different in those times, right? But yeah. just as a thought experiment, right? Were other bands doing this in the 70s?
I did think that. Yeah. I did wonder that today. I was like, did anybody else address it as an issue?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I can imagine, right, is some like band doing a blues, like a blues song about their British lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can imagine like a...
But that could be an accident, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Beatles kind of did that.
Did they?
Well, you know, just by taking chunks of blues and then singing about, I don't know, what do they... Let's think of working on the docks in Liverpool. I don't know.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know.
But I guess that's what I mean is like... I don't know. Just... Yeah, okay, so that did occur to me. It's like, were any other bands directly addressing...
But does that change it?
I don't know. I'm not sure it does.
Well, that's...
I'm not sure it does, because I just think, like... I don't know.
Well, it kind of makes it a bolder move, just from a kind of, like, pushing against the grain kind of way, right? But then, if actually no one realises that you're making that point, then... Point is lost.
Yeah, he could make it in a clearer way. Yeah.
Good lyric.
Slam or scam.
Slam or scam?
It is a soft scam.
Mm.
Because, and I know everything I say is boring.
Mm.
But
it's Christmas.
No. What I was going to say was, as I've said before about other Steely Dan songs, it's not boring.
Right.
This song is bad. I don't like this song.
I'm sure you said it's dull in the last 3 hours.
Yeah, but it's an unusual piece of music, isn't it?
Okay.
It's an unusual piece of music, and the lyrics are attempting to address an issue that is important and worthy of thought.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So that, you know, I can't dismiss that entirely out of hand. Mm. Much so I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying. It's going for it. It's the little song that would.
That's a sort of smug attitude, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you been waiting for the whole 3 hours to accuse me of smugness?
Oh no, I did it instantly, if you remember.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Anyway, I think this is an outright slam.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting.
I wouldn't have said that 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
I would have said soft slam or soft scam, probably.
Okay.
But I've made friends with this song quite a lot over the last week or so. And yeah, I think it's a great little number. For musical and lyrical reasons. And
okay.
This is an outright slam. Right now, it's like my favourite song on the album. But that's because it's now. And I've been listening to it a lot and really enjoying it.
Mm.
Because it has revealed itself to me.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it was a good sight.
And it was goodly to see.
It was goodly. I was thinking about the word goodly the other day, actually, weirdly enough.
Funny,
so it won't be my favourite song on the album in about 36 hours, but right now it kind of is.
Like, okay, really, that's nice. Really, that's a good that's a good result.
But this is what I mean. Like this, I don't like some Steely Dan songs as much as I thought I did, but occasionally something like this happens where I'm like, oh, I like a song more than I ever thought I did, and this has happened. And what a lovely way to end the series for me. And Andrew...
Mm.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas listeners. To you and to yours. Listeners, fire up the oven, pop in the turkey, and gorge yourself.
Sit silly. Beneath the tree.
Hold hands beneath the tree and think of snows past.
To play us out,
we
have Andrew Souter playing his own version of Rose Darling, so... This is his little Christmas gift to you.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, one and all.
Rose querida, vem e dime, Maria cobra já foi dormir. Nossos sons ferventes de amor não vão perturbar o sono dela. O seu olho abrir. Só uma coisa que peço, me dê os sonhos que eu quero. Ninguém vê e ninguém sabe. Você querida, vem e dime, Maria cobra vai sonhando. Talvez ela está em Detroit, com muito grana em seu banco. Talvez estou errado. Sabe que é certo a espora agora nesse vento. Só sentir quando crescer. Querida, vem e dime, o relógio está na mão. palavras vazias de amor não cobriram o clarear que sinto ou fazer que entenda não. Oh querida, por que não vê? É tudo real, eu sei que é. Vamos atrás até o fim. As horas e...